Welcome to the Foolish Adventure Show, where guru hype is banned, lifetime value of a customer is king, and the internet business has replaced the J-O-B as the path to financial success and personal freedom. Now, here's straight talk about making a living online with your host, Tim Conley.
Welcome to another episode of the Foolish Adventure Show. I'm your host, Tim Conley, and I've got two special guests for the price of one today. This couple has been brought to me, this duo has been brought to me by Andrew Warner. He said I should give an interview of Keith and the girl, which is, when he told me, I was just like, oh, you know, this seems so far away from what the Foolish Adventure Show is about, since we're all about entrepreneurship and stuff. And then I just really started diving into the Keith and the Girl show and realized my perception was completely wrong. I think they're going to be a great addition to the interviews that have been on the show, because they are running I don't know how to describe it. I guess like a kind of a podcast that's very similar to a radio show. And it's hilarious. It's excellent comedy. So without further ado, what's up, Keith and the girl?
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
What's up? Yeah, definitely got to get a what's up on this show.
Hey, thanks for having us on. And yeah, we are a podcasting duo. We actually used to date. We broke up and continued the show just right on schedule. In fact, we broke up, and an hour later we recorded another comedy show, and no one realized. We didn't tell our audience for a while later, and it was really weird. And
can I say what's most interesting, Tim? This is the first time I'm hearing this. that we broke up.
You've been broken up.
But and also, you know, your hesitation to interview us because we don't fit the category. I get that, but your show is called Foolish Foolish Adventure, and you have a couple of ex-clowns that you're interviewing now. So I don't know if that's the most foolish you've ever gotten. We used to do kids' parties, and now we're podcasters. We're one of the few. Very, very few people who do podcasting and podcasting only and manage to have that be financing their life.
We challenge. We are the most foolish of all your guests.
Okay. And we'll try to prove that in this episode. Yay. So can we get an introduction as to who each of you are? Because I know for the girl, I would totally mess up your name because you got a little accent thrown in there, and I'm a white boy from the Midwest and I can't do any kind of accent. So can we get a quick introduction as to who Keith and the girl are?
Well, my name's Hemda, and I was born in Israel, which is how I got that kind of name. And I moved here when I was 4. For a long time, I thought I was just going to get a regular, normal job because that seemed to be the only way to go about things. But as soon as I started getting out in the world, I understood that the norm is just going to drive me more crazy than being an entrepreneur. And I think we just kind of fell into that. I met Keith Malley. He was pursuing stand-up. I was pursuing singing. We met at an open mic, and we went from there.
This is all true, yes.
He's just my confirmation voice.
You carry your conscience around as a living being.
Oh my God, if he was my conscience, I'd kill myself.
Keith, so as a stand-up comedian, what was the impetus for that? Like, what drove you to comedy as opposed to something else?
I think I don't necessarily have a passion for stand-up like other people do, but I did always want to try it. And for a year, every weekend, I'd go on stage and do something new. Then we found out about, you know, some people are putting out podcasts. And so maybe, you know, like Hemda was saying, I would, I'll start a podcast, and with Hemda's help, I will promote my stand-up. Maybe Hemda will promote her singing. And then the next thing you know, this is what really took off. And now I'll do a stand-up show once a year with the audience we have. But I don't know. I think people just would say, oh, you're funny. And I had to give it a go.
Well, Keith is one of the funniest people you'll ever meet. I think, you know, he'll upset our audience here and again, because when he has an opinion, it's not just your average ordinary opinion. It is, you know, something extreme. It's said in a very passionate way. And because it comes out a lot in a joking tone, it seems mocking to whoever he's talking about. So we get a lot of controversial response. But I think when you ask Keith, why did he become a stand-up, or, you know, at the time he also had a blog, I think Keith doesn't know how to have a fun thought and just keep it to himself, you know, and then, okay, he'll tell his girlfriend and that's not enough. He'll tell his, you know, best friends and that's not enough. He needs to share everything hilarious, like, and get the response. We have a forums, loves that. He goes back and forth with people all the time because he needs to understand, like, this is so funny. Is this how everybody else thinks? Is this a point of view that is seen by other people? And that's, I think, what makes the show really exciting.
And you learn, no matter almost how ridiculous, a large number of people are feeling the exact same way.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, and when in the media there was a lot of talk about bullying, we started talking about bullying on our show. Keith got hit every day at school. When you look at him now, you would think he's...
I do the hitting.
Exactly. This jock-looking guy was completely just pushed around when he was younger, and we were talking about how to make that stop, and it was controversial. Keith just said you just have to hit your bully back because, you know, when you stand up to that bully doesn't know what to do and finds a different target. And it's been working. I love the response that we get from people when we share our experiences of us growing up, of us, you know, dating, of us, you know, just going, stepping out into the world and getting response from people. It's the best to get that conversation going. And we get to do that for a living.
The other day, somebody bumped me in the store. So I smacked him in the face.
It's like, stop bullying me. Stop bullying me. That's interesting. When I was a kid in grade school, there were these three boys, and so I felt like a bully, but these three boys that kept messing with me three or four times a week, and they would come up and try to start a fight with me, and I have no idea why, because I beat them up every single time.
Wow.
And it's like, please, just leave me alone. I'm over here playing with my G.I. Joes. Just leave me alone. But yet, every week, the three of them would come up, and they would start pushing me, taking my stuff.
Wow.
And then I would fight them, and then they would leave me alone for a few days. I never understood what was going on in their heads.
I wonder if they had little meetings like, man, there's three of us. I know we could do it. And they're watching, you know, ninja movies and going, okay, all right, here's how we have to attack them. It has to be one at a time. Or they'll watch another movie. No, all three at a time. I think they were just trying to work out this thing, and you just kept blowing their minds, just, you know, going, wow, this didn't work. We got to come at him from a different way. You were the source of all their meetings for the longest time. And I hope you looked them up on Facebook and saw how much they're crying on a daily basis now.
Yeah, I never understood it because I didn't want to fight. I just wanted to play. It was recess. It's like, you're totally ruining my recess here.
Speaking of Facebook, sometimes I find these old bullies on Facebook and I rate them now. Want to fight? Their wives, their kids, nobody understands, but I remember.
Yeah, I've been through my past, you know, people do try to befriend me, but I've kind of got a rule that if I haven't spoken to you in at least the last decade, I am not going to friend you on Facebook.
Ooh, wow, monitoring the Facebook hardcore. Are you kidding? I would be like, yeah, look at what I'm doing. All you're doing is doing that thing. Check out what I'm doing. This is another friend that I can send my invite to when I'm having a show.
Plus, I noticed bullies, I don't know if you noticed this, they always have a misshapen head. And it only gets more bigger and misshapen as they grow up. And that's fun to keep tabs on.
It's a rule, huh?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
It's genetic in all of them.
Right.
Okay, so let's get into actually some real business talk here.
All right.
So why a podcast for a comedy show?
Well, at the time, at the time we should have questioned it. And I think if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you can't question too much because it might drive you crazy. It's like, if you start questioning how much work it's going to take to make this, make money and, you know, afford whatever it is that you had your dream set on, then you might not start the adventure. But we started this because our brothers, who are somewhat nerdy, but we totally didn't bully them as kids, told us about this new technological thing that's happening called podcasting. We checked out some shows. We realized, hey, anyone's doing this, and they are, and they're doing it poorly, and we want to really entertain people, so let's get going. We did not think this was entrepreneurial. We did not think that this is how we were going to make money off of it, but we learned so much along the way, and now we are teaching classes on it. We're doing webinars and panels and talking about how to make a living podcasting. It's really exciting.
And the fullest part, you know, comes in whenever we do realize, hey, this is a real thing, but to put so much time into it, because the two of us were doing everything, we have to quit our regular day jobs. And that's scary. That's foolish. But there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's really scary and foolish. You know, I stared at Keith going, I don't know. We have this other really great job. We really do. We're doing kids parties. Surprisingly, I don't know if moms are listening to this, they know that might be a money making thing because they're paying a lot to get to get entertainers right. for their kids. But a lot of people don't know that it's very flexible hours. It lets you do whatever you want. You know, you take the job or you don't. When you take the job, it really pays well. So to give that up to do this was a decision that came where, you know, we actually can't. We don't even have time to do this as a part time thing. We have to make this decision, and it was so scary. But then every time I imagine doing something that is not my goal, every time I imagine going in for work and getting steady pay and getting insurance via your company, you know, it's like, well, why are we doing this on our own? I could know what's coming in on a weekly basis. I could know what my goals are and know that they're attainable, you know, in this fashion and in these years. Why am I doing this? And then I think, well, if you have a regular job that you're not passionate about, that's not your goal, that's not related to something that you really want to do, and you're spending all that time, you'll be dreaming of what you can do during that period. You'll be dreaming, and not to sound like a cliche, you will be dreaming your life away, wondering if you could have done this. So whether you fail or you don't, you have to, you can't just go punch in a clock and hate it for that long. You are half your life at your job, so you might as well give it a go. The end.
step off my soapbox. Exactly. I tend to get on my soapbox a few times too. But yeah, it is. It's that one of those things that, for me, I never wanted to be normal. I didn't want to have the normal life that I saw all the people around me having, because they didn't look all that happy.
Right, and they keep trying to selling that life to you, right? You know, when are you going to straighten up and do this? It's like, I don't know, when are you going to smile? When are you going to laugh for real?
Exactly. My guidance counselor in high school, so my freshman year, I go in and she asks me, okay, so what is it that you're going to do for the rest of your life? What do you want to be when you grow up? And I literally did not know. And I'm growing up in a small rural town in the Midwest. And I said, you know, I think I'm going to move to Southern California, go to college there, and learn how to surf. And that was my life goal.
Nice.
And she's like, no, you can't do that. And you have to actually have a career. And I said, well, I have no idea what it's going to be. Maybe I'll change careers every 5 years. And actually, I kind of have done that almost every 5 years.
That's awesome. You know, it's really scary when a guidance counselor stares you down and goes, what are you going to do for the rest of your life? And you're still going through puberty and you're still trying to figure out who you have a crush on, if that's for real or if it's just because everyone else has a crush on this same person. You know, you're still trying to figure out what is happening to your body and why you're so manic at certain points and so depressed. It's everybody, right? But
everybody.
But that question, what are you going to do for the rest of your life, is too much. And I feel like, you know, it's really weird when at 25 people are panicking. And, you know, I'm included in this. People are panicking. I'm supposed to be here and there. And, you know, I don't want to start this new thing because I already started this other thing. It's like, you know what? Go surf. go find yourself. Go start something, let it fail, start over. It's quite the life when you give yourself a shot and it's not too late. I don't think it's too late when you're 50. I don't think it's too late when you're 60. I think if you have something that you're interested in, that'll help you live longer. It'll help you live better. It'll be more productive and you'll have a reason to live. And maybe that's the reason why people live longer. Do I sound like too much of a hippie? Here we go. Hey, you wanted to surf for a living.
I look like a hippie, so.
Awesome.
I got the long hair and the long facial hair, so nice. I look like a total hippie.
But I do think that it's such a good point when your guidance counselor is just making you decide. I mean, you could decide. You could go to school, do the 4 years, get determined, find a place in your workplace, and then just maybe be bored. It's okay to switch your career because you're bored. That's actually a good reason.
Right. I get a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs that ask me, and they come to me with that same kind of pressure that guidance counselor was hitting me with as a freshman, which is, I've got this idea, and it's got to work. Like this one idea is going to be the thing they do for the rest of their life, and they put so much pressure on that idea that they become paralyzed. They can't move forward. They're so afraid it's going to fail that they don't ever try.
Right, because then you realize, when you realize your risk, it's too much. I feel like, you know, people a lot of time, well, they used to have kids at a younger age, and it's because, yeah, we're having kids, and it's, you know, it seems like such a great idea, and it's so much fun. But, you know, as people get older, they realize what a big deal having a kid is. So they wait longer and they plan better, and, you know, and sometimes it doesn't happen because of it. And I don't think that that's a mistake. I think it's just the way you're going, but you have to, you don't have to, as an entrepreneur, just jump in one morning, just decide, this is what I'm going to do. It's going to go this, that, and the next way. And you outline your stuff. You have to be flexible, because not only does time change, but technology changes. And whether you're in the field of technology like we are, where it's podcasting, technology is what it is, or, you know, it's something else that maybe doesn't have anything to do with technology, you still have to live in a world where technology is moving things forward, and you have to be friends with that, and you have to be flexible about it.
Right. Let's get Keith in here and have a conversation with Keith too. So Keith, when you guys stopped clowning around and decided to do this whole podcasting thing, like, did you guys have a business plan? Have some money set aside? What was going on inside you guys' head?
We didn't. We did, right? We didn't have money set aside at all. What was going through our head? I don't know. We just, like Hemda said, I knew it was, you know, we knew time-wise, you know, to find advertising, never mind just the show itself, you know, just everything that would go along with a business. We had to choose one or the other. If we're really committed, we feel like we have to put all our eggs in one basket. You know, and if it doesn't work out, you know, we can go back to something else. But yeah, we had to, am I explaining it right?
Yeah, except when you say we had to go back to something else, even you are saying something else. We don't know what that is. There's no real backup plan, but the backup plan is you just continue living. So don't worry about it. It's not going to work if you keep looking too far ahead or too far behind. You just kind of go, today I answer my emails, I reach out to someone to see if they can help me with my business. I reach out to an advertiser. Maybe I just do a list of things that is possible for me to do right now, even without, neither one of us has a degree, not in business, not in anything, but we know that we can do something about this. And what's interesting about it is people do help you along the way, because other talents come in that are mutually beneficial to each other.
Okay. How'd I do?
you have a kind of a high voice for such a...
I get passionate.
So no business plan, just like, oh, we're going to do this thing. So what were the first steps? What things did you do first? Did you go out and buy a bunch of equipment, or did you just say, we'll do with what we have?
Well, we didn't have anything. So, yeah, we had to go out, get a little mixer, get some mics, that kind of thing. At the time we were doing it, out of a bedroom, out of a spare bedroom. And the two of us were at one small desk. If we'd have a guest, they'd be on the other side, you know, the third side of the desk. It was a little ridiculous, a little cramped, but we didn't know at the time. You know, it's only when you look back. So, yeah, and then slowly over the years, we start realizing a bigger mixer. Somebody comes in and knows about a sound card. I happen to have a friend that knows some audio, that kind of thing. But, yeah, we were just guessing, do we want $100 sound or $150 sound?
Yeah, we didn't even know about sound or anything. Right. But, you know, you go to the store and you go, here's what we're doing. We don't have a lot of money, but we do want to filter the sound because we were hearing all these other podcasters and their sound was so horrible that it was unlistenable. We didn't want to be that. We just wanted to be a step above that and not spend too much money at the same time. And you don't need to spend that much money.
You would think content's most important, but it's almost even. You have to have sound that people can tolerate, especially now with so many options.
Right. That's definitely something that I don't think people have to spend a lot of money on, but they do need to spend some money.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Right. Okay. So when you got started, before you even hit record, did you try to line up advertisers? Did you try to create a business model, or did you just spend some time recording and putting it out there and seeing what happened?
We almost want to laugh at that because we really didn't know it would take off, and it took off pretty quickly. And what's funny is our audience almost pushed us into the business aspect of it. Really funny because our audience was like, hey, where's your donate button? Right. Hey, where are your t-shirts? Why aren't you selling anything? You know, and we're like, oh, you want t-shirts? Okay, I guess we can research some t-shirt companies and see what makes sense and, you know, look around, see how much t-shirts would cost for a thing like this. And that's how we started learning and growing. We just went, oh, well, if we're selling t-shirts, I think it'd be really fun if we sell a keychain bottle openers with our logo on it, because it kind of goes with the logo that has Keith holding a beer in it, you know, and that's kind of funny. And I guess if we're doing this, you know, let's meet some of our audience. And for our 300th show, we did a live audience show. And we were so nervous about it because we knew we had fans, but because they're on our forums and they're writing us and, you know, they're having conversations and they're on our chat. So we knew that, but will they come out and will it be the same if we're in front of them? Will we feel awkward? Will it work, you know? So our first show... Oh, and also as a podcaster, as a person on the internet, your audience is spread everywhere. So we're doing a show in New York because we're in New York. Hopefully people will come. We made that show for free so that we don't have to stress it. That show was free. A bunch of people came. We recorded it and made money on the other end of it. So to ensure that people would come so that we wouldn't be nervous about having an audience, we made it free. And then we sold it as a download for $5. And we realized, hey, we know what we're doing now. This is something that can actually work. This is something that we're having fun with that can also make money because it looks like we created a product that people want.
So how long did it take you to get to that 300 episodes? Were you doing a daily show or...
Yeah, we did a show right away, 5 days.
Correct.
Oh, that's crazy.
Then we started with a half hour, and I don't even know if it was a month or so.
No, it was 2 weeks at most for the half hour. Keith wanted to do an hour right away, and I thought, no, I might poop my pants if we do that right away. So, but he was right. We can do an hour, and we've been doing an hour.
Right. Now I want to go back to half hour, but I think it's too late.
No, he's such a liar because I'll have to, you know, give him the wrap it up sign at an hour a lot of times. Last week we did a show for 2.5 hours straight just because we were having so much fun and there were so many topics coming up with, you know, really incredible guest named Robert Kelly, and we just kept going.
So do you have a segments or something? Are you splitting it up and saying, okay, this is our... you know, start and finish times, and we're going to cover these different areas inside of it each time?
Not a start and finish time per se, but I do like an hour or two before the show starts. You know, I go through all the papers. You know, I've been taking notes. I can't help it. I'm always jotting things down. And so I put that all together so it makes sense. And it happens to usually be an hour, hour and a half. It just works out that way, usually.
Usually. Yeah, I try to keep my show like 40 minutes, but a lot of times it hits that 50-minute, 60-minute mark.
Yeah, if you have some, if there is something to say, then you say it. But if there's not, you know, it's better just to have the right content and put that out there rather than the length of time.
So let's give something usable to our listeners here. Why would they want a podcast?
They don't. Thank you.
Why would they want a podcast? I think it's only right to podcast when you really have something to say. I think a good focus on a genre or on a topic would be smart so that your audience knows what they're looking for or you can find your audience a little bit easier. They want a podcast because they have something to say, you know, because maybe it complements what they're already doing. If you have, I don't know, I think if you have even an Etsy account and you want to talk about how that works or what inspires you, I like running podcasts. There are these really cool podcasts that you can run to and they motivate you. I mean, there are podcasts about absolutely everything. And so you want to do it maybe not for the money, but to do it to help the business that you're doing now, the business that you're working on now. There's so many different reasons. What do you do? Everyone write me what you're doing and I'll tell you what kind of podcast you should have. Right now.
Right now. Do it right now.
Yeah.
Okay. We gave them a little bit of time to write. Okay. So for people who have something to say, what should they do? What kind of steps should they be taking to get a podcast out there?
Like Keith was saying, I do think that you need something between your microphone and your computer because the sound gets filtered out a little nicer. Go to your local guitar center, Sam Ash, whatever your local store is. Go there. Let them know you're doing a podcast. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to go anywhere. Right now, there are podcasting kits, which tend to be a little more expensive. But if you want to just keep your life simple, you could just Google that podcasting kit and they'll give you a starting kit. It'll be nice and easy, a microphone, a little mixer, something that you can set up yourself. And then go to Libsyn, LIBSYN.com. They have always been really good to us. Tell them that we sent you. And they'll be extra, extra nice.
And they're the ones that, of course, host your files. RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication, I believe.
And
right?
It's not. And it's
there's
not really
nothing
simple.
Nothing simple about it. I don't know how it works. I still don't know. You pay $10 a month, somebody else does it.
Yeah, that makes it simple. Yeah, I use Libsyn also. I use them to host the show.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. You, as much as we say, you know, you do an hour, hour and a half, be flexible. You do want to keep something of a schedule. If you put out a show every Monday, for example, then if you promise that, then get that going. Even if it's every Monday for 10 minutes, don't disappoint your audience. Don't promise them things you can't deliver. If you can't put out a show every Monday, then put out a show every other Monday or whatever your schedule can allow. Start small if you're scared and just, I don't know, stop dreaming of it. Stop thinking of it. If this is what you want to do, just do it. Send it to your friends. Let your friends help promote it. You know, show it off on Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media you have. If you have a blog, post it on there. And you just have to get started and either the ball will roll or it won't.
And she's right. Of course, the schedule is very important. You see this with regular TV shows when they move around the time slots and you can't follow it. Let people know when they will see you next and be consistent.
One of the things that we were chatting a bit about before we got started was post-production. What kind of system do you have going for dealing with your shows afterwards?
When in the beginning, I didn't even know how to play clips from my computer, that kind of thing. And I remember we weren't live at first. And I was playing some stupid thing that Paris Hilton was saying, you know, a thing. And so I would talk as if we just heard the clip and then later put the clip in. And it became more work than the actual show. And so then we went live and then it's like, okay, it's already out there. We can't touch it even if we wanted to. And so that saved us some time. So all we really do now is just compress a little bit at the end if we have to. But it's good that it's live, it's out there, and I can't mess with it even if I wanted to.
So do you mix clips in during your show?
Now, yes. Now, 7.5 years later, I can play from my computer. I can take calls, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We're actually working on putting together something that will teach people a step-by-step how to podcast, from equipment to how to host it to getting the word out there. Just everything that we needed to learn along the way. We're working on something that will be probably an hour long that you can watch and just absolutely kick ass.
That would be cool, because especially on this live side. So how are you getting the show out live? What is it on? What platform?
I used Shoutcast. Then later, unrelated to that, I got a virus, so I got to get that started again. But we go through Ustream also.
Ustream, okay. Yeah. And are you filming yourself at the same time?
We have a webcam. I have a webcam on me. Chemda has one on her, and we have one on the guests. So when you go, we have a chat room, keithandthegirl.com/chat, and you can see everything that's going on in the room.
Yeah. So if you're live, you could not only listen through our chat, you can also chat with each other and watch us and the guests. And we've been filming some episodes now, so we can put out the video of what it's like. And we do have a DVD called Keith and the Girl Live. And it's us in the studio and also live in different cities doing the show, taking the show on the road.
Okay, so now that you've actually used the word studio, so you must have moved up from that desk in the spare bedroom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after we broke up, it was a race to get us out of there. You know, that race was a nice long jog, to be honest. And we had to not only work with each other after we broke up, but also live with each other for a little while. And now we have an apartment that's dedicated only for the show. We set up the studio in what would have been the living room. We have our merchandise in what would have been the bedroom, and it's really handy. And Keith lives with his fiance, and I live with my girlfriend, and it's working out really well.
Hello.
Why the apartment? Just cheaper than commercial?
We looked at some commercial spaces. It's actually so convenient for us to work out of an apartment. There's a shower here, so sometimes we bring clothes, and before we go out, we just shower here, get ready, and go out. There's a full kitchen that we can use, and we have a bunch of interns coming through, and we can stock stuff pretty easily there. I started a running club with some of the interns that we work with, some of the people that we work with, so it's nice to run before we start, where we meet a little earlier. We run before we start working, then we all take showers and start working.
How much did you run today, Chemda?
4.5 miles.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be a little too much for me. Yeah, like
it's a little too much for me too, to be honest.
maybe put a .00 in front of the 4.5 and that'd be all right.
Well, we do, you know, that's very unconventional. So when you say like an apartment, that's really weird. You know, maybe we'll work in an office, but I'll miss the apartment feel of it. You know, it's not normal to hear, you know, that the head of the company is running with the interns, but this is the kind of life I want to live. It's just, I guess, sounds ridiculous to your average person, but I am motivated by these guys, and now I'm running where I know I wouldn't be getting up to run. So it's like a side perk that happens with this kind of thing.
Well, the reason I ask is some acquaintances of mine, they actually rented houses for the purpose of running their office. So they'd leave because they got tired of working from home. But they didn't want to be in a stuffy office place or some strip mall or something. So they wanted something comfortable, and it was relatively inexpensive to rent a house and just move everything in there and have different office spaces. As you said, you know, you got merchandise in one room, you know, a studio in another, and then you still have all the amenities of home right there for you. So you have this really comfortable environment, yet it's still a workspace.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it might sound unprofessional and odd, but it's like you said, it's very, very comfortable. It's a good feel.
So then what's the workday like? Do you spend all day there every day?
We meet at 12 and noon, And we're probably here till 8, 9.
Yeah, and sometimes midnight and 1. You know, we try not to do that so that we can also live a life with our partners, right, with our friends. But, and we thought of coming in earlier, but, you know, realistically, our brains happen to work on a later schedule. It really does. We wake up more at night. So we might as well just go with that, since we do have the option to do that as bosses of our own company.
Right. But yeah, it's definitely a full-time job.
Yeah, we're not, you know, coming in at noon sounds like we're being lazy, but we're still working at least the 8-hour day that everybody else is.
Okay, so let's fill in that space. So your show is an hour to an hour and a half. Okay, so that takes up, you know, a piece of that time, and you're doing that 5 days a week. So what's the rest of the time? What do you have to do to keep your show up and running?
Emails, working on advertising, working on public relations.
Working on relating with the people who work with us. This Sunday, for example, we're having a burger off, a KTG burger off for KTG TV, because after we did a whole bunch of audio, we started a video podcast as well. So, and now we also have 3-4 spinoffs. You know, he has his own show, I have my own show. There's a lot to do. But for example, for this Sunday's burger off, got to get the contestants together, the film crew together, the space for it. We decided we'll be at my house. You know, it's unconventional stuff, but it's still things that need to be worked out. Who's going to compete? Who's going to film it? Who's going to come? What time does it start? How do we relay all this information to everybody and still have it worked out? Who's getting the cameras over there? You know, it needs to be edited. Which editor do we get? So every little project that sounds like, oh, that's fun, it's a burger off, it's at your house, what's the big deal? I don't know. That all these little things take a really long time, because it has to do with other people waiting for their response, keeping the balls up in the air, and still maintaining the rest of the stuff that you have to do.
So, you know, Keith, you kind of skipped over a bit about working with. You're like working with advertisers, working with this.
Right.
I do kind of like to dive into details, especially okay, if it's someone else's details, because I'm nosy that way. So what does that take? Are you doing your own ad sales? Do you have an ad sales team? What kind of structure is that?
We will go out and try to search for ads sometimes. We do have a company that, you know, sometimes works with advertisers. Kemda obviously does most of this.
I'm trying to let Keith talk, but I do answer our ad email, and I am the one who corresponds with people who want to buy ads. We don't like to fill our shows with ads because we want the content to be on its own, but advertising does help keep the show going. So we keep it to a minimum. And right now, most of our ads come from people who are just contacting us, because podcasting is becoming something that people want to advertise on. And our listeners, who understand that every time they hear an ad, they go to the .com or to, you know, whatever it is that they download the MP3. So they know that our ads work because they listen to it and they follow through on it. So we just try to, and we don't know a lot about finding an advertiser. So a lot of times they find us and they get in touch with us. On our website, you have an email to ask us what kind of advertising is, and that's mostly how we go. Sometimes we have deals, so we'll send that out to our own listeners and we'll get a bunch of emails, but on a whole, like, we're not really searching that hard for advertisers, because that's not where we want our focus to be.
You know, I hear that New York's kind of pricey, that, you know, it's not the cheapest place to live in the world.
Right.
So then how do you keep the lights on if you're not actively, you're just letting the advertisers come to you and not being very aggressive about that?
Between the advertising and some merchandise we have, we also have a VIP program, and that's where we get the majority of our money. And you get 10 Keith and the Girls shows completely for free all the time. You know, the new one comes in, you know, and then the last one goes into our VIP program. It's every Keith and the Girls show we ever did. It's the spinoffs that Hemda was talking about. She has What's My Name, and I have My Name is Keith. We have a show called Internment, where it's past and present interns, you know, talking about what it's like working with us out of the room. An intern of ours, the great Danny Hatch, does a show called That's the Show with Danny. And so you get all this stuff for, you know, so much a month, and including Keith and the Girl TV that I come to mention, that kind of thing. That's where we really make what's going on.
That's our base. That's what keeps, like you said, the lights on. And then right. Everything else, we still have to be creative. We're doing a live show on November 9th in New York. We have what's called KTG Week in April. We sell DVDs. I'm going to be recording a Christmas CD because I can sing. So we still have to be creative, and we like to be creative. Otherwise, you know, we might as well just get a regular 9-to-5.
Right. You would
see this paywall.
Yeah, by having your show behind a paywall, and so that just reminded me, like earlier you had said that the show just, you were surprised the show just kind of took off, like it was some sort of magical takeoff tour. Was it that easy? Like you just put the show out there and then thousands of people just showed up, and it's been golden ever since?
In the beginning, I guess we were surprised. I mean, you know, I guess we didn't really think that through. But yeah, word of mouth took off in the beginning. But, you know, when no matter how many listeners, when you're worrying about money, you know, it's weird to use the word easy. But but, you know, thank God that people did latch on to it and found a liking about it. And people, when we talk about too, like some people get nervous about having a podcast where you have a pay section. The audience wants to help you. You know, you'll get a hate email here and again. What are you gonna do? But I mean, you see,
a post hang it up on my wall. That's
right. I mean, yeah, you see people, they hate cat videos, for God's sakes. So you have some crazies out there. But in general, they want to help you. They don't mind the advertising. They don't mind that, you know, they understand that you have to live. Even though we live in a time now where everything's supposed to be free, they understand. When we started with the donate button, we're like, we're going to get some kind of backlash. They liked it. People want to help you. They want you to succeed.
Yeah, there is that. Because they're investing time into your show.
Right. Yeah, they're also investing their bodies. We have over how many tattoos now?
118.
Yeah, that's crazy. You got crazy people listening to your show.
Yeah, crazies listening to crazies. Yeah.
That's our tagline.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, these are normal people that you will find raising awesome kids, going to their job, working hard, and just, you know, write to us saying that we inspired them to live with, you know, with their head high, speaking their minds, not being pushed around, you know, laughing through. Some people say, you know, they had to go to the doctor, they had to go to the ER, they had to get, you know, cancer treatment, and they were still laughing because of our show. And so they put a tattoo of our logo on their body because it was a moment in time that could have been worse, and somehow our show made it better. I mean, what else would you want to hear in life? I mean, I feel like that is a motivation, and that is something that you know that you lived when you affect people that much.
That impact is humbling when right. when somebody tells you how much you've had an impact on their life. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't even know how to describe it, because I feel that every time I get an email that's sent in, like, hey, you know, I listened to the show, I made these changes in my life, and now these good things are happening, and I don't even have the words really to respond, just that. Because I get so humbled by it.
Yeah, you're right. That is what the feeling is. Just me? Who, me? That's my, you could use that response also. Just write, me, who, me?
tattoo that on my body. Okay, so I'm looking at my time here, and I know there's a lot of stuff that, I'm usually into a lot of mindset stuff, and the shows that I've listened to from you guys, just hearing, like you were saying, helping people stand up for themselves, their own ideas, to be individuals. And that is something why it's called the Foolish Adventure Show. is that everyone around you is telling you what you want to do is foolish and not to do it. Whether they love you and they're trying to protect you, or whether they're trying to protect their own egos by telling you not to go out and succeed. The mindset issues that you guys bring to the table, because you're just sitting around joking. How is that able to have such an impact?
You know, we were surprised by it also, but you know, when you go out and you overhear conversations, or when you have a conversation with your average person, people are scared to talk to each other. They're scared to really say how they feel. They're scared to ask you a personal question. We just skip all that. If we're going to talk, let's talk. If we're going to share something funny, let it be something intimate and funny. I don't know. We just let's be for real instead of just talking on some weird dinner table, how's the weather, you know? So
I think that's what we're most proud about, the honesty of the show. And to reiterate, you learn that no matter what you're going through, if it comes from a pure, honest place, a lot of people are feeling the exact same way. I don't remember what year it was, but just one time I realized how insecure, you know, any of this, everybody is. And that made me more secure and confident. And you understand that, you know, if you're honest, you can't be, I don't know, you can't be embarrassed by things because you realize everybody's a mess out there. Do you know what I mean? You get social anxiety when you realize everybody has social anxiety.
There's nothing that you went through that somebody else didn't go through. So it's nice to hear about it, and it's nice to that people relate to it. So we get a lot out of it, and you know, I guess in return, our listeners get a lot out of it also.
Fantastic, fantastic. So I'm gonna cut it off there. So since Keith's so funny, say something funny, Keith.
Sure. Enjoy your foolish adventure.
Enjoy your foolish adventure.
You've just listened to the Foolish Adventure Show with Tim Conley. To get more straight talk about making money online and building a successful internet business, go to foolishadventure.com. There, you can opt into the Freedom File newsletter. You'll also get access to the Foolish Guide to Launching Products video training module, over an hour and 20 minutes of business building knowledge that can generate tens of thousands of dollars for your new product. Enjoy your Foolish Adventure.